Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
We talk so much about new motherhood here at Motherly, and for very good reason. New motherhood is incredibly intense, transformative, scary, beautiful. I've been reflecting a lot lately on what phases of motherhood are. As much as it's healthy and good in our culture now to focus on new motherhood, there is this enduring marathon of motherhood that I feel like I am in now. And for me personally, when I look back on the last decade, I have been in survival mode. I was working full-time the vast majority of the last 12 years, adding children to my family, moving a lot for my career and my husband's career, growing this company. And if I'm honest, I just feel like those years have been about survival and just getting through the day. And now, as I feel like my family is complete with the birth of our son, thinking about the next decade of our family life has, for me, become an invitation to reflect on what does it mean to thrive in this next phase of life? What could be possible for your life as a human being, a mother, maybe a working mom, a partner? I no longer want to be in survival mode. I want to build a life for myself and my family that gets a little bit closer to thriving. I want wellness. I want space. I want presence. I want the time to enjoy this family that I have built. Today's conversation is all about moving from surviving to thriving and how having kids becomes really an invitation to explore what is truly possible for our lives when we believe that we are worthy of thriving. Hey, Mama, welcome to the Motherly Podcast, where we have honest conversations about modern motherhood. I am Liz Tennedy. I'm a co-founder here at Motherly, and I'm also a mom of five myself. Today's guest is Brandi Sellers Jackson, a birth, postpartum, and what she calls life doula. Brandi's the author of the book On Thriving, Harnessing Joy Through Life's Great Labors, in which she shares lessons from her work as a doula, creating a compassionate guide to healing and thriving as mothers. In today's episode, Brandi and I have a conversation about the life-changing journey of motherhood, the importance of self-care, and healing childhood trauma. Brandi offers insights she's learned as a doula, survival of childhood trauma, and mother of three, as well as tips on how all of us as mothers can shift from surviving to thriving. Brandi Sellers Jackson, welcome to the Motherly Podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Brandi, you became a mom pretty young. What surprised you about motherhood?
What surprised me most about motherhood? I would say how much I realize I don't control and how scary that was to not have that control.
So when reading your book, which is so beautiful, so vulnerable, and kind of interweaving your personal story with all the wisdom that you've gained along the way, it's so clear that motherhood for you has been this great teacher. Can you talk a little bit about that self-awareness journey of coming into greater awareness of your childhood through your motherhood journey and what that process was like for you?
Yeah, I've had the opportunity to do it three times. And each time has been different. because each kid is different. And with each kid, I've learned something different about myself because I've had to parent them in a certain way and then also reparent myself in a certain way. For example, I have three boys and it is as crazy as you think it is.
I have four boys, so yeah.
Yeah. I mean, when people... And I know I hate to make generalities, but I know when people say, oh, well, you know, girls could be the same. All I know is that I have friends that have a house full of girls and it feels like that their house is a lot more quieter than mine. It feels like that their house is a lot less rowdier than mine. I could be wrong. You know, it's different for every house. But with that, having three boys has been my greatest teacher. It's been such a healer. And also at times it's been very, the only way I can describe it is just, yeah, you know, I grew up where for me as a child, men were scary. They were loud and they were harsh. And in my case, my biological father was abusive and they were angry. And I think it's God's, the universe, funny joke to, of course, have me be the only girl in my family outside of my dog, Shaka. I think that's quite comedic, but it's also been, like I said, so very healing and so very sweet because I get a wonderful opportunity to raise kind, kind boys and kind men. And sweet men and men that are aware and the antithesis of what I grew up with, if that makes sense.
Makes sense. It, you know, your new book on thriving, you know, weaves together your own story of what you went through with the wisdom that you've gained through therapy and growing self-awareness and healing practices and your work as a doula and a life doula, a birth doula as well. Is that process been like? Because I think, you know, for so many of us, motherhood is this vehicle for this self-awakening of realizing, oh, I'm reliving my childhood in a totally different way now through my motherhood. You know, we want people to read the book to understand your journey and find inspiration, but tell us a little bit more about steps in that healing journey for you.
So I became a mother in my early 20s with my first son, Jackson. And, you know, I think I was like a lot of 20-something-year-olds that were flying by the seat of my pants, figuring it out, this new baby, this new marriage. And I realized how easy it is to just be pummeled into a whole different stratosphere of life.
So you got married and were pregnant within 3 months.
Yes, 3 months. 3 months. And so I'm trying to figure out my role as a wife and also as a mother, along with the findings of your own self in your 20s. And now that I'm in my 40s, looking at that, I'm like, whoa, that was a doozy. That was a lot. But at the time, you're in it. So you're just like, yeah, this is just life. And it's like, that was a lot. That was a lot. So I'm figuring that out. There's so much of my childhood trauma that I wasn't even aware of. I think a lot of it I suppressed. I know a lot of it I suppressed. And it wasn't until my 30s where the world started to fall apart. 2020, my own world started to fall apart. And that was a catalyst for me to begin asking myself some really honest questions. Why is it that I feel like I'm never safe, even when I am? Why is it that I feel that my enough is never quite enough? Why am I so hard on myself? And the more I began to ask myself questions, the more curious I became. And then I started writing this book because I wanted to write a book that I needed while dealing with the loss of my mother, while navigating so many other things. And I just started having conversations. I had a conversation with my grandmother because I wanted to ask her just some questions about rest, because that's a part of the book as well. Rest as resistance and rest and how that can be a healer. And I said, you know, Grandma, I just want to thank you because your home was the one place where I could feel. And she finished my sentence. She said, safe. that right there, it broke me open in so many ways. When you're a kid, everything just seems so jumbled and you're kind of trying to put together the pieces of what you remember. And was it scary because I was so small, everyone's so big, or was it scary because it was actually scary? And her saying that, it really validated my experience and it actually pushed me further into this work of uncovering the black hole.
The fighting, the abuse, the stress of your childhood is certainly apparent. It wasn't the only thing in your childhood, but it was real. But the work that you've done felt hopeful to me. You wrote this: many of our parents were not afforded the tools that we have now. And while this is not an excuse for continued harm, recognizing it can aid in our growing perspective and how we heal through past hurts and dysfunction. Some of our parents were oversized children with unhealed trauma and trigger responses, doing their best. What did it take for you to get to the place where that was your perspective on your childhood?
You know, I say in the book, I allowed myself to find the origin of blame. And I don't know if a lot of us allow ourselves to do that, even though we're feeling it already. It's like, well, I'm this way because they did this, right? The parents. And so many of us feel guilty for doing that. Some of us don't. But what I did, I took myself through this chain of people. So I was like, okay, so I don't feel safe because my biological father did X, Y, and Z. Okay, he's the blame. Okay, he is this way because his father did X, Y, and Z and his mother abandoned him. Okay, so they're to blame. All right, now, what happened to his father? I don't know, but I'm pretty sure he learned that from somewhere too. What happened to his mother? Okay, I'm not sure, but from what I know, her mother also was not around. And so I started just going down and down and down until I ran out of faces and ran out of names. I realized that I could go way, way back. And it kind of goes into this thing that Dr. Mariel Bouquet talks about, intergenerational trauma, where we run out of people, we run out of faces, you run out of names, but it's there and it's deep within us. And she describes that when you go into this work, you're not only unlocking your own trauma, you're unlocking the trauma of everyone.
Who came before you.
Who came before you. And that's what makes it so much heavier and difficult. I think when we think of it that way, we can give ourselves so much grace and so much compassion because we realize that this didn't start with us. It can end with us though. So I just allowed myself to feel it and to blame and to point the finger until I was like, I don't even know where else to go.
When you think about the kinds of sons that you're raising and the cycles that you have broken, what does that really mean to you? Do you have a feeling of accomplishment, of safety, of well-being because of that work that you've done and even the process maybe that you didn't want to go through? What does it feel like to be a person who's trying to break that cycle in the ways that I think you've said that you have?
It feels good. It also feels like, you know, it's sobering because I know this is continued work. It's not a destination, but I'm so proud. I'm so proud of myself because I really believe that when people know better, I want to believe that they do better. I think it's the same with our own parents. If they had the tools that we had, that we have, they'd probably be better humans too. If they didn't have the stigma that they had around mental health, you know, nowadays people go to therapy. And it's just a Tuesday. It isn't that, you know, this person's crazy. Back then, that's what it was. People were labeled that way. Something is wrong with them. They are defective. They are broken. Now it's like, oh, it's just Tuesday. It's therapy day. It's self-care. So it's like, if they had that, imagine how much further they would be.
Absolutely. You know, there is something there to be said in our ability, your and my, our generation's ability to access that, that somehow we can thank our parents' generation for that. There was a space, there was an opening, and we are both in places where we can do that work, and they were not able to.
Yeah. I mean, we're so much further along than they were. And it's just because of the access. We have access, just as our kids will be.
And I'm sure, and my husband and I laugh about this, but like, think of all the things that they're going to say on their podcasts about their parents someday and all the ways that we're screwing it up too in our own special way. But, you know, I think that's real. But there's also a difference between imperfect parenting and trauma, right? And so you should be proud of that cycle that you have broken. So in your book, you weave together a narrative around being a doula. And I think those of us who are parents and moms, like, that might immediately mean one thing. You also talk about yourself as a life doula, which is something that I need, that I didn't know what to call, but I felt that way so much. And I know you're mothering without your mother now. I'm mothering with a mom far away who's not around day to day. And that feeling of like, I need to be tended to, and the mother deserves to be mothered. But you call yourself a life doula. What does that mean?
So it's two things. So I was talking with a friend of mine. I mentioned her in the book. Her name is Aisha Tasati. She's a doula as well, a sister friend, a healer, amazing. And we were talking on the phone and we were like, man, wouldn't it be great if we had a life doula? Like if someone was there to tend to us, like just in the middle of folding laundry, you know? Yeah, it's been like 30 years since we had a baby, but you know, you're always postpartum, aren't you? But wouldn't it be cool if someone is just there to help you navigate all the transitions of life? I was like, I know, right? And so during the pandemic, something kind of switched. There's no shortage of babies being born because of the pandemic. That didn't stop. And I remember I started getting calls around, hey, so I have a friend, they're just navigating their in-laws and they just really would like for you to just chat with them and just see how to figure that out. Or I have a friend who just had a baby, but that's not what we need you for. We need you to just sit and talk with her over the phone. That's it. And it was really weird at first because I was like, okay, so no breastfeeding support. But what I realized is like, oh, that's what a life doula is. It's someone who can sit there with you in your stuff and just be there and hold space. And the truth is, I think that we all have those people in our lives. You know, I talk about the five people you need to birth your dreams. And I think we all have those people. We have that one person who is just there and they sit with us in the yuck of it and in the yum of it and can just hold space and love up on us and make sure we're okay.
Well, tell us about those five people that you need.
First, I say the accountant. And that doesn't have to do with money, but the person that holds you accountable. They are the person that's like, hey, you said you're going to do the thing. Are you doing the thing? They're that person. Obviously, the hole puncher. This needs to be someone that you trust because this is the person that's going to punch holes and your dream. Like, okay, so have you thought about this? I don't know about that. They're that person who's like sees the fault lines and what could possibly work better. There's the life doula that I talked about, the person who can just sit there and hold space with you. There's the healthy distractor. They are the person that they don't have anything to do with any of it. They are the person that can go on a long walk with you, talk with you, and show you a really cute picture of a puppy. They're that person. Because we need that. We need that. We need the healthy distractions when we're in the dream casting birth of our dreams. Then there's the nurturer and the teacher. They're the person that's just going to nurture you. They're going to love up on you. They are the ones also that have been there before. They've been there before. So they know more than you. I actually say, I think that's the first person you need to get, or second. They've been there and they are the person that they have given you the permission to call them rain, sleet, or snow. Hey, you know, when you were here, what do I do? They're that person.
Your book is about thriving, right? It's called On Thriving. And I was pondering so much when I was reading your book, because I feel like in my own life and in the lives of mothers that we talk to at Motherly, so many of us just feel like we spend the whole season of motherhood, of raising kids, in survival mode. And all of us want to get to thriving mode, but culturally, in our own internal dialogues, in expectations, and a lack of support around us, I think most of us are probably still in survival mode to a certain extent in some areas of our lives. So what do you want moms in the midst of survival mode to know about their right to thrive, and maybe just basic steps that they can take towards what it might look like for them to thrive?
One, I love how you said their right to thrive. I love how you said that, because I think that is the start. That is the inception right there. I think we have to know that we deserve it, that we're worthy of thriving. I talk about how when you've experienced trauma, you kind of feel this thing of it's for everyone else but you. Everything is for everyone else but you. And so it's this reclamation, this refocus of no, it's for me. I deserve good things. I am worthy of love. I am worthy of good things happening to me and for me. So I think that's the first step. And I will say this, it's not an overnight process. It's not like this thing of like, all of a sudden, I'm going to know that I'm worthy. And then it's going to be like, oh yeah, give me that. I deserve this. Yeah, more patience. Yeah, more grace. Oh yeah, no. It will feel like you are bench pressing like 250. It will feel weird, because along with that thriving, I believe there's a lot of movement shifts. It looks like asking for what you need, asking for possibly even what you deserve. That is going to feel very, very weird. Because if you've gone through life never asking for what you need, and then all of a sudden, it's okay to ask for what you need, it's weird. But I will say, the more you use the muscle, the more it becomes second nature. So you just got to use that muscle every day. Giving yourself a lot of grace. Know that what you've experienced, it's going to take a lot of unlearning.
How do you define thriving? Because life is never perfect, but it's clear that you're in a place of thriving, or at least like moving towards thriving away from the hardship, the trauma, and the survival mode that you spent a lot of your life in. So how do you define that season, that thriving?
It feels different. I think a lot of times we get used to survival. It becomes second nature, if that makes sense. And we don't realize that we're in it until we're out of it. For example, this constant running, that is like my natural go-to if I'm not careful. Just go, 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 go. And then when I get anxious, I just start going. Thriving for me looks like stopping. It looks like stop, pause. Everything's okay. Slow down. Take your time. It's okay. That's what thriving looks like for me. So I think what it looks like for someone else, I would say, think about the things that come second nature to you. What's your first response when you are triggered, when you're anxious, when you hear bad news, whatever it is? What's your first response? And really think about how it really makes you feel when you react in that way, or when you respond in that way. And most people, if you realize, if you're really honest with yourself, like, I really don't like the way that feels, more than likely that's your survival tool, and that is what you do as survival. And then for thriving, think about the opposite. What would be the opposite thing? So whereas my thing is to just go quicker and quicker and quicker and go, 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 my thriving tool would be to stop, pause, slow down. And it's funny, because my kids think I'm absolutely nuts. They'll hear me say, slow down. And they're like, who are you talking to? I'm like, oh, myself. I'm telling myself to slow down. I'm saying slow down.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market. Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Can you give a specific example of what do you think it is that mothers in particular need to unlearn when it comes to moving from surviving to thriving?
That you're important. You're important.
And where do we learn we're not important?
Oh my gosh, culture. I think that there's this thing of kids are first. The kids are first. The kids are first. The kids are first. And I understand the idea. But I mean, if you look at, you know, if we're on a plane, you've heard that example. There's like, here, take the oxygen for yourself first and then everyone else. And I think we have that very backwards. I hear a lot of mothers who we put our happiness, the weight of it on our kids, almost as if like, if I put all my energy into this little person, they are the ones that are going to make me happy. And you make you happy. And I will say this, I think there's something beautiful about when we as mothers find and define our own happiness outside of our children. It actually helps them. For example, the other day I was in the car and our youngest, Jupiter, he's 5. He's very intuitive. He was like, "Mommy, are you still happy?" Because he knew about the book launch. I was like, "Oh my gosh, Jupiter, I'm so happy. I'm so happy." And he said very quickly, "I'm glad you're happy." And it just broke me because I was like, oh my gosh. He said, "I'm glad you're happy." And then I said, "Well, Jupiter, are you happy?" And he said, "I'm happy that you're happy." And that sounds so like basic. But what I got from that is that a lot of our kids are like that. They want us to be happy and they want our happiness to come from here and not necessarily always from them. Because I think, too, that's a heavy burden on kids. When they feel that they are the root and the source of our entire happiness, that's a heavy load. And so finding our joy outside of our children, although it may sound sacrilegious to some, it's the greatest gift we could give to our children. Find your own happiness. Because that's the other part too. I think these kids are going to leave eventually. They're going to leave and they're going to live their own life. And you still are stuck with you and you are still stuck with your source of happy. So it's like, we better find it outside of every external thing.
You were 24 when you became a mom for the first time. What is it like being a mom to Jupiter now, having a young one asking those kind of profoundly adorable and innocent questions with the wisdom of what you learned about yourself and the healing that you've done? Because your oldest is 17? Okay, so somehow you have a 17-year-old, but you also have a little one. How is motherhood different with that layer of experience and wisdom?
And I have an 8-year-old Jedi in the middle. It's so different. And it's funny because we explain that to Jackson all the time, the oldest, because he's like, "Oh my God, they get away with everything." I'm like, it's not that they get away with everything. It's that your mom and your dad are smarter now. And we've changed and we've evolved. We're not the 20-somethings that we were. And we know what life looks like. We also know how fast you grow. We also know that this too shall pass. You're not still sleeping in our bed. You're 17. We would love for you to, but Actually, no.
We'd love a hug.
We would love a hug. Although he actually still gives us hugs.
Oh, good.
And it is the sweetest hug. He's 6'1", 6'2". Ah, oh, and he's so much taller than I am. I'm only 5'2" on a good day. But he gives the sweetest hugs. We've had to explain to him. It's like, one, we've learned, we've grown. Your parents are not the same parents.
With the wisdom of 17 years of motherhood, how does that shape how you parent Jupiter? I'm specifically thinking, like, do you feel like you're a more present mom now? Do you slow down for him in a way that you couldn't slow down before? What's the invitation for our listeners to borrow the hard-won wisdom that you've gathered?
I'm a lot more patient, for sure, because I know that this is all going to pass. The tantrums and falling out on the floor, to hitting his brother in the back of the head, like, because it's funny to him. It will pass. And I know that because I have a 17-year-old and they're not this way. So I'm a lot gentler with myself. I think also to give yourself permission to change. Just because you did it this way with one kid doesn't mean you have to do it that way for the next and the next. It's different children. You're a different person. You are.
Another big theme in the book is through your work as a birth doula and just using the analogy of birth. But for most of our listeners, birth isn't an analogy. It's like a real thing we went through to become moms. It's real. Can you just reflect on what witnessing birth has been like? Because the only births I've witnessed were my own, and I was sort of also having out-of-body experiences through that. Like, what have you learned about women and mothers and resilience by being a birth doula?
We are so resilient. And I count it an honor anytime that I get to see a mom in that space, you know, transition where she's like, I can't do this. This is dumb. I want to leave. I had one mom ask me one time, can you make it stop? And I was like the pain? She's like, no, just it. All of it. Like the birth, all of it. And it made me chuckle because I was like, are you asking me if I can make your baby not come out? Yeah. No, I can't. I'm in awe every time that I get to see a mom at that point of just, I can't do this, I can't do this, I can't do this, and they do it. They do it. And in fact, so much so that when they get to that point of I can't do it, I know that they're close. That's how I know. It's like, oh, that baby's about to be here in like 10 minutes. And it doesn't stop with birth. We do it all the time through teething. We do it through sleep regression. We do it through just so many expansive moments where we just feel like we cannot do it. And we do it every time. I mean, even in my own birth story, Jedi's was the hardest for me. His birth was the hardest. It literally cracked me open. But I did it. I did it.
Do you find yourself, as I certainly do, reaching for that memory of that resilience at other times in your life where you need to remember that you can do it?
Yeah. I mean, it was definitely the hardest moment of my life. Hard. I mean, birth is, it's tough. It's definitely top five things that I've done that was hard. Whenever I am in a moment of just like, I'm done, throwing in the towel. I'm like, okay, I referenced those top five things. And that's probably top two, within the top two, interchangeably.
What about for those moms who maybe had a traumatic birth themselves? How do you work with them to help be witness to what they went through when birth maybe isn't a story of their own resilience, or maybe it's still such a difficult period to revisit and remember?
I tell them, because that happens, allow yourself to grieve. You don't have to do this thing where it's like, well, at least you had a healthy baby. You had a healthy baby, so that's all that matters. No, that's not all that matters. It's actually not all that matters. What you experience matters as well. And so when that happens, I tell them, I'm so sorry that things did not go the way we wanted them to go or you wanted them to go. I also try to prepare them beforehand that birth is wild. And yeah, we have a birth plan, but it's more like birth preferences, not necessarily a plan because plans change. So, you know, just be open. My biggest thing is reminding them of their sense of agency, because I think in birth, that is a big trigger for people, especially those who have experienced sexual assault. Being in this vulnerable position and things are out of their control can be triggering. Pain can be triggering. So reminding them that they have a say, that even if things go left, you still have a say. Because a lot of times what I've seen in birth is that immediately when things feel out of control, I've seen mothers start feeling very unsafe. So reminding them, I've had to whisper to people before, like, you're safe, you're safe, you're safe, you're safe, you're safe.
Do you ever think of yourself as a doula to yourself? And like, when you don't have that life doula in your life, how do you mother yourself through these stages with that kind of caring and compassion that you show in labor? So how have you navigated being that person? Do you ever think about it like a self doula or a just that kind of tending that we also need sometimes to our own selves?
I say that that's probably our most important job, is to remind ourselves that we have to mother ourselves. It's imperative.
What do you think mothering ourselves looks like in practice?
I think it looks like not glazing over things. For example, if you are feeling at your wit's end and kids are running around and they're being kids, it looks like not just like, okay, let me just power through. And you feel your body feeling triggered. You feel your body feeling restless. You feel your body also almost like matching their energy. It looks like, okay, before I respond to them, what do I need? It looks like, time out. Let me go to the back real quick. I need 5 minutes. Maybe it's that you don't eat a cold meal. You make your food first, maybe. A dear, dear friend of mine, she's also a midwife, Kimberly Durden. She said in African cultures that it is custom to make the mother's meal first. And I was like, what? Because that is so weird for me. I've never heard of such. But they feel that you have to nurture the mother first. And so the mother will eat with the children, but she makes her meal first. And I just thought that was really amazing. And so it looks like giving yourself what you need first before you respond to them. And that's easier said than done. It's not always easy to do that, but it is you saying, okay, let me mother you. What is it that you need? Because these kids will be here. They'll be fine.
And they'll benefit from having a more resourced mother, which is the sort of twist that if you can't do it for you, do it for your kids. But it's enough to just do it for you. You deserve it as much as they do. I think we have to overcome this feeling of selfishness or of an instinct that it's all for the kids, or just that mothers should somehow disappear slowly behind their children, and that is just all about the martyr life towards your children.
And also, like I said, when these kids leave the house, we're left with ourselves. We're left with us. And so that's why we are important. You're important. You matter beyond your children.
As you enter this chapter of your own life, striving to thrive rather than just survive life and motherhood, what does that look like for you? What does that feel like? And how is it different than you've lived in the past?
It feels like ease. It feels like intention as opposed to just go. And it feels like legacy, like I'm teaching my children how to really take care. They're learning from me. They're watching me. I want them to see an example of someone who gave themselves as much grace as they give everyone else. I want them to see an example of what self-love really looks like and what love really looks like. And I want them to know that their mother is and was absolutely full and absolutely loved life and loves life and is happy. And so that's what I'm teaching them through my actions, not just through my words, but through my actions, because they're watching me.
So at Motherly, we believe that motherhood brings out superpowers. Doesn't mean moms are superhuman necessarily, but that there are strengths and talents, insights, things within us that come out through this experience of being a mother. So what do you see as your superpower?
Joy is my superpower. I think my breath is my superpower. Everyone has it, but I can breathe. I can breathe with the best of them. My words are my superpower. What I say is my superpower. And how I make people feel. Like, do I make my children, my partner, my friends, my family, do they feel loved when they're with me? That's a superpower. And I hope they do.
Brandi Sellers-Jackson, thank you so much for joining us on the Motherly Podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Well, that's it for this episode. Thank you so much, Brandi. And thank you for listening to our podcast. We'll be back next week with another great guest. You don't want to miss it. And thanks to our listeners for tuning in. We will be back next week with another great guest. You don't want to miss it. The Motherly Podcast is executive produced by Jennifer Bassett. Our senior producer is Marissa Bramwell. Editing is by Joel Edinburgh. Our music is from the Blue Dot Sessions. I'm your host, Liz Tennedy. Thank you so much for listening.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns. Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.